following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 199, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm Dave Nelson along with Brad Ludwig and Anessa Moyens. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Happy Halloween week.
Mwahahaha.
Pretty sure this is coming out a couple days after Halloween, but we're still kind of in the mode, in the scary Halloween type mode, if you catch my drift.
Happy Day of the Dead then.
Okay, is that, I thought that was before Halloween.
No, it's after.
Oh, it's after, okay. So it's more of a Day of the Dead than Halloween, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe.
What are you guys doing for Halloween?
Working.
Yeah, I am too.
No plans.
Is there a dress up at either of your places of employment?
Not really. I haven't noticed anyone really dress up for Halloween at work. So I usually just wear my little skull necklace, and I've got a little jack-o'-lantern sitting on my desk and a little pumpkin. So that's my Halloween decor.
So Halloween light, sort
yeah.
of.
They don't like a whole lot of clutter on our countertop. So
okay. All right.
Well, if I feel like dressing up for Halloween, I just dress up for Halloween. I don't care.
I wonder if they'd get mad if I wore like the Steve mask box to work. I could look like I'm from Minecraft.
There you go. Boom.
Well, do it. Find out.
Box on my head.
See what they say. All right. So want to thank Monkey Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called The Alien Syndrome, or just Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Monkey Warhol. This is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, and in real life. To start things off, a question this week for you guys, since it is Halloween week, what's the scariest alien-themed movie that you have ever seen? Who wants to go first?
Brad can go first.
I'm going to go with John Carpenter's The Thing.
Are you talking about the original or
no,
the remake?
John Carpenter's.
Oh, John Thing. Carpenter's. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Because there's several versions. There's the original one, I believe had a longer title back in the 1950s. I think.
Yeah.
This is the 1982.
Okay.
Correct.
And then they did the remake of the John Carpenter version a few years ago.
I don't think I've seen that.
It wasn't a remake. It took place at the Norwegian.
Oh, that's right. It took place at the other base.
Yeah. Okay. Doy. So what did you, why was it so scary for you?
I saw it when I was about 14 and I lived in the country, and I watched it at night by myself.
Why? Why did you do that?
Well, exactly. Because I was bored, I think. And I had the lights off. So yeah, I watched that, and it scared the crap out of me. It's a very mood.
It's similar to the original Alien.
It uses a lot of, I don't know, misdirection. There's a lot of suspense. There's a lot, you know, and the creature is so terrifying because it can look like anything or anyone. So, you know, at one point it becomes a dog, you know, it could be anyone. And the effects that they used, especially when they tried to resuscitate the dude, and his chest opens up into like a big mouth and bites off the guy's hands. That was really incredibly scary.
So, Anessa, what's your answer? What's the scariest alien-themed movie you've ever seen?
The first thing that popped in my head was Alien. So the original movie. And I think the biggest thing was just everything was, not everything, but there was a lot of darkness in the film and you didn't know what to expect. There was a lot of suspense. Like, is there something around the corner? Is there something that's going to jump out? Is he about to die? Is she about to die? Like, what's going on? So, I just think it left a lot to the imagination, and I think that makes it a much more effective like horror movie. The ones that are just slash and gore and stuff, I don't really find those scary. But if I'm left to observe and start to kind of let my mind like do the thinking, I suppose, if that's the correct way of saying it, then I'm much more likely to find something scary or whatnot. So
the unknown is more scary than the known.
Yes. I can handle someone coming in and, you know, with chainsaws hacking people up, whatever you can think of, and it's like, okay, well, that's ridiculous and I can see it coming. But it's when you can't necessarily see something coming, and especially if it's not incredibly fast paced, it just really lets your mind run wild, and to me that's much more scary.
In the news.
All right, Anessa, you've got our first story this week.
I do. Flying sorcerer.
I'm intrigued. Go on.
I just really like the title. A UFO hunter claims aliens visited the home of Count Dracula. Excuse me. Count Dracula being a character that's based off of Vlad the Impaler. If you've not really heard about the guy, I suggest you look him up on the Googles.
He was a bad man.
He was a very bad man. So he makes Count Dracula look pretty mild. I'm just saying. So a mysterious flying disc spotted near castle built by Vlad the Impaler, the bloodthirsty tyrant who inspired fictional bloodsucker Count Dracula. An academic has sunk his teeth into claims that aliens landed in Transylvania, the home of Vlad the Impaler. Dan D. Farkas, which I really wanted to read as Dandy. Dandy Farkas, PhD, has unearthed startling information which suggests UFOs and otherworldly occupants visited Romania over hundreds of years. He claimed a couple saw a gigantic disc rise from a nearby lake whilst visiting the ruins of Pionari, dubbed Dracula's castle after it was rebuilt in 1459 by the bloodthirsty ruler Vlad the Impaler. At first they thought it was heading in their direction, but it moved towards Transylvania and disappeared over the mountains. Another case involved police sergeant Marian Manchu and Maricel Rusu, a voluntary guard who was out on night patrol in July 8, 1996 in the village of Certesi. Around 12:30 a.m., when they were in front of the police office, Manchu told Rusi that he was going back to the police accommodation to get something to eat. The moment he passed the side of the building, he heard a whistling sound and sensed a current of air. He turned around and saw on the road something, quote, splashing with blue and red lights, making a sound like a voom voom, unquote.
Voom voom.
Voom voom.
Voom voom voom.
At first, he thought it was a police car, but as he got closer, he realized it was hovering half a meter above the ground, and a small and very strange person was moving around next to it. He cried, "Guard!" and saw a horrified guard emerging from a ditch where he had been hiding. He whispered, "Mr. Marion, it is Satan." Rusu later claimed that the UFO landed just behind him and he saw three small human-like creatures moving around outside of it. He described them as having white faces, big heads with pointed ears, and covered in gray scales. He said they moved, quote, as if they were drunk. He stated, "When I saw what they look like, their very ugly faces, I told myself that they are not human. I became afraid and I was hiding myself in the ditch just in case something might happen because I never seen any such beings in my life before." After 2 minutes, the UFOs rose up and shot off at tremendous speed towards the village of Puchidia. Dan, 76, believes the witnesses are credible, but without proper tests, the truth may never be known. He said, "It is unlikely the witnesses could invent all the very peculiar details and go to public with them in such a highly natural and convincing manner." Ooh, I'm hearing noises. It is also unlikely that it could be a delusion staged by someone else. Unfortunately, we did not have the means to conduct any psychological tests or lie detectors, but we did not discover anybody with any kind of motivation to invent such a story. It would have been interesting to use regressive hypnosis or something similar in this case. Unfortunately, in Romania, we face a lack of professionals practicing hypnotic regression and willing to apply it in such situations. Also, even the expenses to arrange such sessions are a real problem.
Yeah, and as we noted last week, it's not always trustworthy.
Exactly. They can be leading. Dan believes a medieval fresco in the monastery church in the historic city of Sighosora, Transylvania, could depict a UFO visitation. The painting shows a large disc-shaped object floating above a building, possibly a church, with a beam coming out underneath. Under the image is written in German a passage from Psalm 137, Israel, trust the Lord. Gilly Schechter and Hanan Sabbath from the Israeli Extraterrestrial and UFO Research Association could not find out who did the painting or when. However, the text cannot date before Luther had translated and published the Bible in German in 1534. The authors noted that the same disc covering, diagonally, divided into sectors and with the stick underneath, appeared on a number of metals from the 17th century, probably chips used in gambling. The image has been reproduced in Dan's new book, UFOs Over Romania, published by Yorkshire-based Flying Disc Press. Since 2011, he has been president of the Association of the Study of Unidentified Aerospace Phenomenon, ASFAN, in Romania.
Sorry. One more time, please.
ASFAN. Sorry. ASFAN, maybe?
No, ASFAN.
So it's in Romania, and he's a member of the Academy of Medical Sciences of Romania. Dan, who holds an MSc in maths and physics, or a master's in science, I suppose, in math and physics, and a PhD in math and computers, said, are these painting depictions of medieval UFOs? Sorry, I'm thinking about ASFAN. Sorry. Anyway, are these painting depictions of medieval UFO sightings, or do they have a much more mundane and simpler explanation? As an academic and a UFO researcher, I must admit that the images in these paintings are certainly worth a second look, and we should not rule out the possibility that they do depict something that today would be described as a UFO. And this comes from thesun.co.uk.
What's your takeaway from this? Do you guys believe this story? Does it sound legitimate?
No.
I would say the UFO sightings, I would say, are probably legit. The one of the witnesses, to me, it seems like they changed their story. Like, one person says that they saw one, and then they said they saw three, and it was behind them as opposed to in front of them. I'm not entirely sure what was up with that. Or maybe it was because it was two different people. Who knows? Maybe one had a better view of the multiple aliens versus the other individual who was hanging out in a ditch or gutter or whatever it was. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting. I just really hoped that there would be more about Vlad the Impaler. So,
yeah, oh well. Very, very clickbaity story.
It is. I'm like, ooh, Vlad the Impaler. Maybe he was somehow inspired by UFOs. Maybe he would say that, hey, I put heads on stakes because these beings from the sky told me to, and then I drink their blood because that just seemed like the path I was going on.
Nope.
So,
none of that.
Nope. None of that, and I was kind of bummed. Not going to lie.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks, or click on the icons at gncast.com.
So I think we had talked about this a few episodes ago when the story first broke, but they are remaking Alien Nation, not the TV show, but the original 1980s movie, into another movie. Jeff Nichols, who is going to be the director, says that it's not going to be remake. It's going to be based on his original idea. So he's going to take the initial title and concept and sort of mold an idea he had and then kind of form it around the original intent of that movie. Do you understand what I'm trying to say here?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much my idea, he said. It doesn't really have anything to do with the original. The only connection between the 1988 movie and Nichols' screenplay is the title. But it's sort of the same, in a way. He continued by saying, Fox called to ask me to do that. I said no, but I had been working on this bigger idea of my own. And then I thought about it and said, well, you know, that's a good title. And that title could go to my bigger idea, then maybe I might actually get a chance to get it made. So in that sense, I'm currently building it the same way I built my other movies, meaning kind of from the ground up. So he took the opportunity to take an idea that he had and use the concept and the title of Alienation for his own bidding.
That seems like cheating.
It sort of does, yeah.
Because he's going to draw in people that are thinking it's going to be like the original Alienation, and then they're going to find out that it's nothing like the first one.
Well, I thought,
and then they're going to be disappointed.
Well, I thought that at first, but then it went on to say that his own idea explores the time between an alien arrival and when they merge with society. So Alienation, the aliens had been here for a while, and it kind of dealt with how the humans related to aliens and vice versa, a lot of prejudices, a lot of racism going on. And this is kind of, they're saying that this is going to be like how all that developed in the first place. It's sort of a prequel when you think about it.
They could rename it.
That's true. But it's Hollywood, right? They got to bring the put asses in the seats.
I suppose.
I'm not saying, I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying that's the reality, right?
Yeah. It is. It is indeed.
So, Consumer Report here, when this movie comes out eventually, if it does come out eventually, this is our warning saying it's not really Alienation, but it's Alienation.
I'm not saying that it's Alienation, but it's Alienation.
Perfect.
I'm sorry. I fell asleep at the wheel here.
Great band.
There you go.
If you like what you've heard on this Galactic Network podcast, please consider helping us out financially by going to gncast.com/support. On that page, you'll find links to our Patreon campaign where you can make a small recurring monthly pledge of as little as $1. Or click on our Amazon affiliate link, make a purchase, and we get a very small percentage from the sale. Again, go to gncast.com/support. And thank you for supporting the Galactic Network podcast.
This has been kind of an interesting story. Scientists say signals from certain stars are probably aliens. Scientists writing in the publications of the Astronomical Society of the Pacific. Whew. That's a long name.
That's no ass whatever. Ass fan.
Ass fam.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Have found unusual signals emanating from a group of stars that are signals probably from extraterrestrial intelligence. The signals have exactly the shape of a signal predicted in the previous publication and are therefore in agreement with this extraterrestrial intelligence hypothesis. And this is written poorly. Their paper, Discovery of Peculiar Periodic Spectral Modulations in a Small Fraction of Solar-Type Stars. What a riveting title. Details their hypothesis that these signals indicate some sort of alien intelligence. The fact that they are only found in a very small fraction of stars within a narrow spectral range centered near the spectral type of the sun is also in agreement with the ETI hypothesis, the paper's authors dryly wrote. Those authors are E.F. Bora and E. Trottier. Before you go out and found a doomsday cult, it should be noted that these signals are not completely confirmed to be generated by intelligent life. In fact, The signals could be formed by chemical reactions in certain stars. At this stage, this hypothesis needs to be confirmed with further work, write the authors. Although unlikely, there is a possibility that the signals are due to highly peculiar chemical compositions in a small fraction of galactic halo stars.
So what you're saying is there's a small chance that it may be this chemical reaction, but the chance that it's aliens is actually better than that.
Yes.
Wow.
At least that's what they've... of course, like anything in science, it needs peer review. So it remains to be seen as to whether or not this is actually from aliens.
So it may be the whole alien megastructure all over again.
Kind of. Even Seth Shostak of SETI Institute told the Astronomy Magazine that the paper is ringing bells in the astronomy community in that they're not really buying the claim. Apparently, several, more than three or four referees have been disinclined to see this published. I am quite skeptical, in particular, of the data processing that can take spectrally sampled data and infer time variations. So I'd be a little careful, Seth said. Even the authors note they took a few leaps in their own conclusions. In the end, they stand by their hypothesis but ask for further study.
See, they're being honest with themselves. They're saying, yes, it might be aliens, but we could be wrong about that. But you guys look at it, let us know what you think, and if there's a new conclusion, then we'll be fine with it.
Yep.
These guys, by the way, are from Quebec City. They're at a university in Quebec City.
Nice.
Yeah. It's Canadian.
Really? I had no idea.
All right, Miss Snarky.
Senorita Crabass.
That's me.
No, I thought I'm very encouraged by this. I mean, because we've had false alarms before, but none of those stories have been this like sure of themselves off the bat.
Yeah,
we may have to move up our estimates from last week. Remember, I asked you guys last week when we...
I don't remember what mine was. It was like 2037 or something.
Yeah. So this could be it. This could be it, guys.
It could. It could also be just stars.
It's just gas.
It could. Yeah. You stole my line, Anessa. Sorry. I was going to say that.
I didn't say anything. You can say it, Dave.
Or it could be gas. Literally gas.
A star had some broccoli and.
Sorry. Excuse me. Woo. Sorry, guys.
I can relate to that star.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Hi. Hello. Making a promo is hard. Hey, this is Brad Ludwig from the Adventure Party Podcast. Every Sunday, we talk about board games, card games, role-playing games, reindeer games. Co-host, friend, game designer, and gaming store manager Glenn Bittner reviews a game each week and recommends something to add to your library or game closet setup thing. Our Kickstarter spotlight shines on a game you should back with your hard-earned cash. We've picked successfully backed projects about 95% of the time. I really thought that airport board game from Russia was gonna fly. I'll shot that percentage right in the... We also chat with people who work in the game industry, or we pick an important topic that deals with some aspect of gaming. We welcome you to the Adventure Party.
Adventure Party is part of the Galactic Network. You can find us at gncasts.com.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
A black, triangular, three-dimensional shape. Huge. Just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects.
flying over me.
It had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
Time to take a look at a sighting for the week. This is somebody that's seen something either in the sky, on the horizon, on the ground. Maybe they went to investigate. Maybe they ran away. That's a throwback from a couple episodes ago. But they saw something and they reported about it. So what did you bring us this week, Anessa?
There was a gentleman who saw something in Chula Vista, California back in 1975. He saw a large diamond-shaped craft flying in a very straight line. This was reported back in May of this year. And the time of day was around 6:30 to 7 when he initially saw the craft. It was dusk evening. So he writes, "Although it was already starting to get dark, I could still see that the craft I was seeing was silver in color and very large. The craft I saw was anywhere from 100 to 200 yards in length. It was approximately half a mile away, just north of the Otay Mesa housing area near 805 Freeway and near Palm Avenue, near the southern side of Chula Vista." So this happened while he was visiting one of his neighbors in Otay Mesa, which was just south of Chula Vista, California, one night in May of 1975. "Shortly after dusk, I was sitting out on the second floor terrace along with several other adult neighbors when the lady of the house asked, 'What's that?' while pointing to the opposite direction that I was facing. I turned around and saw a large craft flying at a very low altitude and at a very slow rate of speed. Maybe 40 to 50 miles per hour, but maybe even slower than that. I noticed that it flew in a very straight line. There was a large dome in the center of its top side. The dome would glow, changing in color from very dark red to a lighter red. Then it would go from orange to yellow, and then almost white, then back to orange, and then to dark red again, and so on. It didn't blink, it just seemed to glow. It reminded me of a glowing ember on a fire. I could see laser-like beams of light coming out of each of its corners. I was in the U.S. Air Force for 12 years and had seen all types of aircraft, but this was something like I had never seen before. It made no noise whatsoever, although it was less than half a mile away from our location, and it was very large. I would estimate that it was anywhere from 100 to 200 yards long. I watched it for about 40 seconds to a minute or so at the end, and at the end of the sighting, I saw it turn on its axis, but it never changed the direction that it was flying in. I knew that I was seeing something completely unfamiliar, but I just couldn't believe that I was actually seeing this with my own two eyes." The very next day, there was a story about the sighting in the Chula Vista Star News. Many local residents, including a Chula Vista police officer, reported seeing a diamond-shaped craft just above their homes, traveling very slowly and even hovering at times. The description of the craft saw was exactly what I witnessed. Can the sighting be explained as any conventional man-made or natural object? No, not at all. So then it talks about witness background. I've had some college training, as you mentioned, 12 years in the U.S. Air Force working as a radar maintenance technician. He worked on heavy ground radar, ACNW. Views on UFOs before and after the sighting. He says, "I've been interested in UFOs since I was around 9 or 10 years of age, but I had never seen anything out of the ordinary until I saw this craft. This sighting made me a true believer in UFOs, although I have no idea what they could be." So he reported the sighting to friends and family. His name is Mike R. Garcia, and he lives in Garland, Texas, which is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Hey, Mike.
Howdy.
How's it going?
Oh, and he's 78, so.
Well, it sounds very intriguing.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And I like the description of laser beam-like lights, like shooting from the corners, because normally you get like the different and he mentions like the craft changes colors, well, more like from orange to red and whatnot. But he also says that he can see laser like beams of light coming out of each of its corners, which you don't always see, and you might see something like a spotlight. I don't know if that what he was getting at, but it's unusual that it would be on all the corners of the ship. At least I think it's unusual.
Maybe it was a Pink Floyd show. Was there a flying pig?
No flying pig in this one. Maybe it was at a different angle. I really enjoyed this one. I saw some others. Like, so you're supposed to go to, like, say, MUFON or...
Wait a second. Anessa, you're
MUFON,
saying it wrong.
I said it wrong. MUFON or, like the daily sightings or something, and you're supposed to say, hey, I saw this craft and let me describe it to you. But going through some of those, like, people were like, hey, I saw stuff, email me or contact me.
Oh my goodness.
And be like, well, I kind of want to know what you saw first. Anyway, this was a good one.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup.
It is time for Picks and Warnings. Picks and Warnings. Picks and Warnings. These are alien-related things that we have enjoyed. It's the best way to say it. And we rate them on a flying saucer scale. Now, Anessa, you just had the sightings, so I'm going to bump you down after me. I'll go first, if that's okay.
That's fine.
And this is one that Brad was going to talk about. But hey, I was first in the dock, right? So
oh, that's true. First yeah. come, first serve.
Exactly.
Snooze, you lose.
Supergirl, welcome to Earth. This week's episode was cool. It had a lot of alien... It was a alien-themed episode. Well, they kind of all are, because Supergirl is a lot more alien than, say, Flash, which is metahumans, right?
Correct.
They all kind of have their own little angle on things, because you got Flash with the metahumans, you got Arrow. It has been mystical, but they're kind of more back to the street level, non-metahuman, non-alien, just kind of bad people, right?
Yeah.
And then you have Legends of Tomorrow, which is time traveling stuff. Let's talk about this episode. It featured Wonder Woman, Linda Carter, as the president. I'll just read the description and then we can talk about it. When the president arrives to sign an order giving amnesty to aliens at the DEO, the man who arrived in the craft awakens and has powers like Supergirl and leaves. Kara begins her first day as a reporter, just as Jimmy begins his as Kat's replacement. Snapper Carr doesn't show Jimmy respect and gives Kara a lame assignment. Supergirl goes to meet the president when there's an attack by someone with heat vision that like Supergirl, but since she's in front of the president, it's not her. They assume it's the man who came. They track him down, learn he's from the planet next to Krypton that was laid waste when Krypton was destroyed. He denies attacking the president, but they lock him up anyway. Alex tries to find the one who attacked the president and finds a detective, Maggie Sawyer, also investigating, who shows her something she didn't know. And something she didn't know was this kind of like hole-in-the-wall dive bar where all the aliens hang out. It's kind of like the cantina from Star Wars, in a way.
Yeah, kind of.
But it's where all the aliens, because they can relate to each other, right? They're not being judged by the humans. It's a safe place. So they come, have a couple of drinks, relax, and like, hey, this is cool. Okay.
They can be themselves.
So lots of alien stuff here. We learned who the what's his name? The character, the person they thought was from Krypton, but he's not.
Mon-El,
okay. And he's from a neighboring planet. And I don't know if that was that. Was that the way it was in the comics? That it was a neighboring planet?
No. In the comics, Daxam was colonized by some earlier Kryptonians. So long before Krypton is destroyed.
Okay.
And the Kryptonians that ended up on Daxam ended up interbreeding with the actual Daxamites there, and their genealogies mixed. They were on a red sun solar system as well. That's what Daxam is. So they did not have powers either. So, but when Daxamites are exposed to yellow sunlight, they do get powers as well.
I thought this episode was neat because they dealt with racism and prejudice when it came to humans and aliens, but also between Kryptonians and Daxamites. Because I guess there was a lot of animosity between those two races, because Kryptonians were very science-based, very kind of more upper crust than the other, what were they called again?
Daxamites.
Daxamites were more, I don't know, how would you describe how they described it in the show? Do you remember that part?
Daxamites, Krypton was a democratic scientific society, and Daxam...
That was a monarchy,
wasn't a monarchy,
it?
Okay,
yes.
That's what it was. Okay. There was a lot of neat little homages to... Well, on these episodes, there's always like Easter eggs to the comics.
Yes.
But there was an Easter egg to the Wonder Woman TV show from the 1970s in this episode.
Yep.
Kara gets caught on fire, and she does the twirl like Linda Carter did back on in the 1970s Wonder Woman show. She would twirl, and she would turn from what's her human?
Diana Prince
to Wonder Woman. So she'd have her costume on after the twirl. And Wonder Woman did that to extinguish the fire that she was on. She was on fire. I thought that was kind of a neat little homage to Wonder Woman.
Would you like some of the other stuff?
Yes, please. I was going to ask you, what were some of the other Easter eggs?
Some of the characters that we were introduced to, Maggie Sawyer is actually a Batman character.
Mm.
She was a part of the Gotham PD. She actually ended up in a relationship with Batwoman, and DC did not like the direction that was taking. The author or the writer for that particular Batwoman series had Kathy Kane, who is Batwoman, propose to Maggie Sawyer.
And the
DC said that was a line too far, and they could not cross that.
And the character in Supergirl is also gay, which is neat.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that, what's Supergirl's sister's name?
Alex.
I think Alex is probably gay as well.
They seem to be, well, they mentioned that there was going to be a regular character who was going to be gay this season. So... that's where that's probably headed.
There was also Miss Martian at the very end.
Yes.
Oh, we should have put a spoiler warning on this. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to put a spoiler in front of this. So, if you don't want to know some stuff that may happen, that happened in the comics, it may happen in the series. Megan, Ms. Martian, is actually a white Martian pretending to be a green Martian in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be very interesting to see how that progresses and how they explore that in the context of the show.
Anything else that we missed? Is Snapper Carr? He's an original character from the comic book, right?
He is. Snapper Carr was the sort of mascot for the Justice League, just as Johnny Thunder was kind of the mascot. Snapper Carr was the... Okay, let's approach it from this angle. When Batman first started out, there was Batman. To make Batman more relatable, they gave him a kid sidekick. They gave him Robin as a way for... boys reading it at the time, kind of an in that, you know, they could be Batman's sidekick. And it was, you know, that was their in on the story. So to kind of ground just like a team book, they wanted to have a person that did not have powers, but just kind of hung out with the team and did some stuff. That was Snapper Carr for the Justice League. Snapper Carr was a teenager, didn't have any powers in the 60s. Later, I think it was in a book series in the 80s, Snapper Carr had the ability to teleport, and he would snap, and that would be how he would teleport.
Ah, Snapper Carr. I get it.
Well, in the early days, Snapper Carr, when he would talk, he'd be like,
That's not annoying at all.
No, not at all. So that's how he got his nickname, Snapper, because he snapped all the time.
All right.
So anyways, so they made Snapper Carr in a middle-aged white dude, ornery editor of a newspaper or media sort of thing. And that's kind of weird. One other thing I wanted to mention too was, now I've forgotten.
Well, Snapper Carr is very much taking on the role of Perry White from Superman, yeah. Sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that's the only way that they could really, I can't remember the actress's name now, who played Cat Grant.
Callista.
Callista Flockhart.
Yes, thank you.
The way she played Cat was absolutely wonderful. So you really needed to have somebody who was kind of in your face, you know, to kind of take that, to take some of that role. So I think they're doing a good job trying to cover that. But quite honestly, Callista Flockhart really kind of killed it with the Cat Grant character.
Yeah. She's not gone forever. She'll be back every once in a while.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. That is my pick this week. I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 flying saucers.
Nice.
All right. Anessa, you want to go next?
Sure. I did a short story because I've been trying to find a short story to do for like Halloween for the show that was not copywritten. no luck so far. I was trying to find something that was like alien themed and more like on the spooky side. But anyway, this is one of the stories that I came across. It was called The Stoker and the Stars by Algis Burgess, or Boudris. And then the description that's in Goodreads says, when you've had your ears pinned back in a bow knot, it's sometimes hard to remember that an intelligent people has no respect for a whipped enemy, but does for a fairly beaten enemy. Know him? Yes, I know him. Knew him. That was 20 years ago. Everybody knows him. Everybody who passed him on the street knows him. Everybody who went to the same schools or even to different schools in different towns knows him now. Ask them. But I knew him. I lived 3 feet away from him for a month and a half. I shipped with him and called him by his first name. Essentially, this book takes place, or this short story, it's approximately 22 pages long. So it is pretty short. It's a short, short story. It takes place after this war. The humans had fought against 3 different alien races. And in the end, the humans were allowed, well, I guess what was left, they were allowed to continue to live on Earth, but they were only allowed to stay within the solar system except for trading. And there was a small channel or whatever you want to call it that they could travel to do some trading. And I guess there were like embargoes, so they weren't able to get everything that they wanted or needed from these other beings. And they are about to set sail, as it were, in the high seas of space. And this gentleman shows up and he wants to be a stoker. And they're like, well, we don't really have a need for a stoker on this ship because the technology was higher than, you know, a steam engine. But he insisted, he's like, I want to be a stoker. I want to be a stoker. And they're like, okay, fine, come be a stoker. So anyway, he joined the crew, and it's just a really interesting read because there's like little bits and pieces that you gather from the war, post-war life, and just how things have changed between the relations between humans and aliens. It's one of those that it would be kind of nice for it to be longer so you could learn more about things. But I think overall it was a pretty good length if you just want something short to read. So it was free on the Amazons. I think it might be on Project Gutenberg. So yeah, it was. Oh, and it was written in 1932. So there's that.
Oh, wow. That's way back when.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 1932. I looked at a lot of short stories.
Isn't that when Columbus sailed the ocean blue?
Yes, I thought it was 1932.
Well, Anessa, thank you for trying to find something.
Oh, no, 1959. I was looking at a different one that was 1932.
Okay.
But still, it was. It's longer than we've been alive, so there's that.
Longer than me. I'm the oldest of us here. And that was, I was born in 67, so 8 years before I was born.
There you go.
Yeah. I can do math.
Yay! But no, I enjoyed it. There's not like, ooh, lots of action packed. It's just more of a, huh, I wonder who that guy is. I wonder what he's doing. I wonder what he's doing with that. Why is he here? Where is he going? Sort of thing, you know? So, yeah, no, I enjoyed it.
Okay, what's your rating?
3.5.
3.5 flying saucers. All right.
Yeah, half of it got blown up, so I'm sorry.
Was it an easy read? Like, did it just
fly by? Oh,
yeah,
it was a very easy read.
Okay. All right.
It didn't get, like, bogged down. You know how, like, sometimes when you read a story, it gets bogged down in the description? Or just trying to get its point across?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel that it was very bogged down. It flowed pretty well, I think. To me, anyway.
I like stories that don't get lost in the details, that just tells the story and things are just the way they are. And they just come out in the story. They don't go out of their way to totally explain everything. And that sounds like
right,
what
this
is.
Right, and that's not what this story does. And the things that are revealed, you know, you'll see, I guess, spoiler alert, the Stoker has a uniform in his duffel bag, and they kind of go back to talk about the war a little bit and how one branch of the military was hit the hardest and why and that sort of thing. So but they don't go into like super detail. They don't get bogged down. They just, here's like a general overview of what happened and off we go to the next thing. So no, I thought it had a pretty good flow.
It really amazes me about stories that were written that long ago that talk about being in space. Like, how did they know how it worked before we actually went into space?
Well, you know, they don't necessarily know how it worked. They can only guess and dream and hope that people can imagine the same thing, see things the way that they do, like the possibility of what space is like. Because, I mean, I don't recall the name of the movie, but I remember watching a film that was done in the 1940s, 30s, 40s. And there was a fight scene out in space and they were standing on the ship.
Oh, I think I've seen that. And I believe that was the 1950s.
So it might have been the 1950s. Yeah. But yeah, they were standing on the ship fighting, like throwing punches. And I'm like, that's not how space works, guys.
Do you think, okay, let me ask a question. Do you think it's easier now, knowing what we know about space travel, to write science fiction in space? Or back then, when we didn't know anything, we just made it up?
I think it was easier back then to write about space because you were given more freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, you're kind of limited to what we know. So I would say, one, we know how gravity is, or, you know, you're actually like falling in space. You're not flying. You know about like the temperatures and whatnot. Whereas before, you might be able to imagine like, oh, I'm running around in space and I'm doing this and I've gone to Mars and I've gone to Venus and I can breathe without any help. So I kind of think that in some regards, our knowledge limits things a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we can also use that knowledge to try to like be more creative.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess, kind of a toss up. But I, in a way, kind of think that there's a little more freedom with what you can do in space versus now, where you can't just go hang outside a spaceship and throw some punches on a wing.
Yeah, I'd like to go back to that time where it's like, just make everything up. Just like, space is made of diamonds. And, you know, there's, I don't, whatever, you know, just use your imagination to come up with the craziest crap possible, and that's your science fiction story.
Right. No, and they have a bigger playground, and now you're kind of limited to your craft mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe any sort of objects that might be outside your craft, like asteroids or something.
All right, Brad, let's get back to reality here. It looks like you have some kind of documentary show.
I do. It was on Netflix, and it's called Australian Skies. And it's a documentary about Australian UFO expert Damien Knott. And they do a road trip across Australia to investigate reported UFOs and interview witnesses to the sightings. Now, the nice thing about this is that they actually go through and show, like, this is what it would sound like and look like if somebody used a drone to fake UFOs. You know, you could clearly hear the drone in the background as it was flying around. They did some other things like talking about sightings in like the area where Damien lives is in a kind of a remote area and it's very dark outside. Not a whole lot of light pollution. I think he said there's like about 500 people that live in his town. And most nights he will see some kind of light show. And this is where it took a little twist for me in that he kind of believes that, you know, people that hang out with him see more UFOs than they have ever in their lifetime. So he's kind of under the belief that the UFOs have chosen him to show themselves to him. And he even talks about how he's wondering if there's some kind of psychic connection that he might have with the aliens. So it kind of lost it a little bit there for me, but it was really entertaining to see these guys kind of road trip through. Whoops. I just fired it back up here. I apologize. Let's see. It's about 73 minutes long. So an hour and what is that? An hour and 13 minutes. So it's a quick watch, and it's done in documentary style. So it's a lot of interviews. The director will talk to the camera, and they'll kind of talk about the process of, you know, where they're going, what they've done, what they've set up, and it's very informative. And they do kind of break down what they're doing to try to alleviate any thoughts as you, the viewer. Maybe they're rigging some things up to make things, you know, to make it look like there's UFOs and stuff they put in the film just to kind of sensationalize it. So it puts a lot of fears to rest. So it was well worth watching, very entertaining, and it's very interesting to kind of see anybody but Scott Waring talk about UFOs, as we seem to get a lot in our news stories. But it was nice to see another perspective of the phenomenon. So I'd give it about 4.5 flying saucers.
Wow. And, okay. That's more than I thought you'd give it.
No, it's a very well done documentary. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it.
All right. I have a song to play for you guys. Hang on. You come from an end down All right. Thank you very much, guys. Let's review our picks for the week. We had Brad's Australian Skies. Australia, the country that puts alien in things.
Australian.
Yeah, yeah. Supergirl, Welcome to Earth. And Anessa had, the name of the short story is The Stoker and the Stars. I'm not going to even try to attempt the name of the author.
Ass fan. I just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm guessing Algis Boudris?
Boutros Ghali?
Yes.
Sure.
You can find the links to our picks in the show notes.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going to gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
And that's going to do it for this edition of the Alien Invasion, a Galactic Network podcast. I want to thank Retard von Dürnberg, a composer from Germany, for providing the new closing music called Be Water. Learn more about him and his music at thecaravel.net. It's thecaravel.net. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Final thoughts. Brad, you're first.
Happy Halloween.
One, two, three. That's my count. The count.
You forgot the
One, two, All right.
There you go.
Anessa, your final thought.
S-Fan.
All right. Best final thought ever.
Terrible.
All right. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye. Bye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's gncasts.com.